Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
A happy fall day to you, Mark. How are you doing?
Well, fall and 90 degrees, but yes, fall, I guess it almost is. So yes, happy fall to you too.
Right. And the thing about fall is it's one of those times of year out here in the West Coast too, where you can go from, you know, very cold mornings to hot days to it's just quite unpredictable. But I actually sort of like that.
It's been beautiful and actually welcome cool mornings. It's actually been down around 60 in the morning, which is some of these days it hasn't been getting down below 80, which is no fun to wake up to. But yeah, exactly. It's beautiful.
Well, good. Let's turn to our poem this week. This week we're going to talk about exacerbation of COPD, as is typical. I'm just going to give a little bit of background to put the poem in context. About 60% of exacerbations of COPD are due to respiratory infections, mostly obviously bacterial and viral. There's another large group of COPD exacerbations that have sort of typically unknown etiologies. Most of these are related to other medical conditions like ischemic heart disease, heart failure, some sort of aspiration, perhaps even a pulmonary embolism. The risk factors for exacerbation, not for COPD, are many. They include advanced age, the history of a productive cough, the duration of COPD, concomitant antibiotic therapy, hospitalizations within the previous year, and obviously one or more comorbidities, including the list that I just mentioned, ischemic heart disease, chronic heart failure, and even diabetes. When it comes to treatment, the goals are pretty simple. Obviously, we want to get the patient better, but the four sort of tenets is first to identify the cause of the exacerbation. Second of all, to pay close attention to lung function, and that means working with bronchodilators and other pharmacologic agents. We want to make sure that oxygenation is adequate and secretion clearance is adequate. And lastly, we want to prevent complications of immobility, in other words, sitting on your behind, getting better. And that includes thromboemboli and deconditioning. When it comes to drug treatment, lots of options, although, you know, the mainstays, the audience will know, include short-acting bronchodilators, glucocorticoids, and antibiotics. Today we're going to focus on steroids, the glucocorticoids, and these are given primarily to improve lung function and treatment success, but they have also been shown as a class to decrease hospitalization or length of hospital stay. This week's poem asks an interesting question, a little bit of this whole picture, which is, does the initial use of low-dose oral glucocorticoids increase the risk of treatment failure in patients with acute exacerbations of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease? For the answer, Mark turns to an article that was published in JAMA. Mark, what did the authors find?
Yeah, this was a retrospective cohort study, so it wasn't a randomized trial. I mean, ideally, what you'd want to do is randomize folks to either high dose or low dose, an IV or oral. And there was actually a previous study comparing oral with IV prednisolone and found no difference back in 2007. That was one of the poems we covered. In this study, the investigators looked at the association between the initial dose and the route of steroids and outcomes in patients with acute COPD exacerbations in 414 hospitals. So huge study, but remember, retrospective cohort study, so they're inherent limitations. They included patients over 40 who came into a general medical ward for an acute COPD exacerbation and who got steroids in the first couple of days. And the low-dose oral therapy group was defined as anyone who got between 20 and 80 milligrams of oral prednisone within the first 2 days of hospitalization. The high-dose group got IV meds, and their first dose was between the equivalent of 120 and 800 milligrams in terms of prednisone equivalent steroids. Treatment failure was defined as initiation of mechanical ventilation or dying or getting readmitted within 30 days. Of 80,000 patients that they enrolled, most were given high-dose IV steroids, 92%. Only 8% got low-dose oral steroids. And they found that treatment failure was equally likely, 11% in the IV group and 10% in the oral group. So no difference between the groups. Now, you might say, well, maybe the less sick patients got oral steroids, and maybe the sicker ones got IV, which would be a reasonable thing to guess. So they tried to adjust for comorbidities and severity of illness and demographics and age, and tried to see if they could use factors that predicted the likelihood of oral versus IV. It's called a propensity analysis. So they're trying to adjust for factors that would lead to the propensity of a certain treatment. And after they did that adjustment, they still found no difference between groups. The ones who had initial low-dose oral therapy had a shorter length of stay, so that's a plus. And they had lower costs, again, another plus. So for these non-critically ill patients with an acute COPD exacerbation, they found, based on this retrospective cohort study, that a modest dose of oral steroids, you know, typically 60 milligrams a day, was of prednisone was as good as the higher dose IV steroids.
Well, good. So that has both cost implications as well as disease outcome implications. What do you think, Mark, of the idea of having people have a low threshold for starting these medications on their own at home? Is this something you think that they need to come to the office and have a full evaluation by a physician, or as soon as they feel that their respiratory status is becoming compromised, and most of these patients will be well aware of that, have them start these low-dose steroids that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think there have been some studies more in the asthma field of the sort of pill in the pocket or, right, you know, PRN prescription strategy. And, you know, I think you have to, you know, for something like that, select the patient carefully. You don't want someone who's going to be taking steroids, you know, every other day and or taking them for one day and then not taking them, you know, 2 days later. I think you have to have a reasonably competent, well-educated kind of patient, or at least not necessarily well-educated, but someone who you trust to follow those instructions. Right. And you need to monitor how much are they using. You don't want them using, again, the equivalent of daily steroids, over a period of long term. But no, I think that's a very reasonable strategy. I mean, I remember when I was in training, wondering about this question. You know, why do we always use IV? Doesn't maybe oral is just as good? It should be absorbed if their gut's working and it gets in quickly within, you know, an hour or two. Why are we doing this IV thing? And then some of the residents would be using 60 of prednisolone and others 125 and others 250 every 6 hours. I'm thinking, you know, 1,000 milligrams. It was almost sort of a macho thing, right, of, well, I use 250 for my patients. And, right, you know, so it's interesting to see this study. And I think it's not the final word. It's not the best possible study we could see. And that should be possible and ethical to do. So hopefully we'll see even better evidence down the road.
Excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Mark. We'll look forward to talking with you next week for a new poem.
All right, good talking to you.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.